ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्यं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिकी। कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नंदनाय च नंदगोपकुमाराय गोविंदाय नमो नमः। हरे कृष्ण। रीडिंग फ्रॉम दी 10th canto, chapter 72, text number 18. Rajan vidhyati teen praptan arthino duramagatan tanna prayachha bhadramte यद्वयं कामयामहे। राजन् विद्यतितीन् प्राप्तान् अर्थिनो दूरमागतान् तन्नः प्रयच्छ भद्रं ते यद्वयं कामयामहे। राजन् विद्यतितीन् प्राप्तान् अर्थिनो दूरमागतान् तन्न प्रयच्छ भद्रं ते यद्वयं कामयामहे। तन्न प्रयच्छ भद्रं ते यद्वयं कामयामहे। माताजी, राजन, ओ किंग, विधि, प्लीज नो, अतिथीन, गेस्ट्स, प्राप्तान, अराइव्ड, अर्थिनः, डिजायरस ऑफ गेन, दूरम, From far away, agatan, come, tat, that, naha, to us, prayachha, please grant, bhadram, all good, te, unto you, yat, whatever, vayam, we, kamayamahe, are desiring. Translation. Krishna, Arjun and Bhim said, O King, know us to be needy guests who have come to you from afar. We wish all good unto you. Please grant us whatever we desire. There is no purport to this verse. Reading the next one. Kim durmarshah tithikshunam, kim akaryam, kim akaryam asadubhihi, kim na deyam vadanyanam kah parah samadarshinam. What can the tolerant not bear? What will the wicked not do? What will the generous not give in charity? And who will those of equal vision see as an outsider? Purport. In the previous verse, Lord Krishna and the two Pandav brothers, Bhima and Arjun, requested Jarasandh to grant them whatever they asked of him. Here they explain why there is no need for them to specify their desire. The Acharyas comment on this verse as follows. Jarasandh might be thinking that if you request my son, from whom separation would be intolerable, To this possible objection, Krishna and the Pandavas reply, for a tolerant person, nothing is intolerable. Similarly, Jarasandh could object, what if you ask me to give my body or my precious jewels and other ornaments, which are meant to be given to my sons, not to ordinary beggars? To this, they reply, for the generous, what is not to be donated in charity? In other words, everything is to be given. Jarasandh might also object that he could be giving charity to his enemies. To this, his guests counter with the statement, Kaha paraha samadarshinam. For those with equal vision, who is a stranger? Thus, Sri Krishna and the Pandavas encouraged Jarasandh to simply agree to grant their request without further discussion. Om Jnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakada Mahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Utapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Shabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Padidanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vashadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna Beg the blessings of all the devotees so that I can speak for my purification. So, this chapter is entitled The Slaying of the Demon Jarasandh. So here, you see that Lord Krishna has come along with Arjun and Bhim disguised as Brahmins and he has come to Magadha and he is in front of Jarasandh, who is the king there, modern day Bihar. And now he's speaking this to Jarasandh and he's asking for charity. And it seems that Brahmins, even in those times, would ask for sometimes seemingly unreasonable things and charity. And even today, times have not changed so much. In one sense, we see that, you know, when Brahmins, when you go to the holy places like Jagannath Puri and you go to Vrindavan, you find the Brahmins, you know, Dakshina, 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 Dakshina. So it's okay for Brahmins to beg charity. So Lord Krishna has disguised himself in that way in order to avoid unnecessary encounter and cause unnecessary disturbance. If he goes as a Kshatriya and wages a war, then that would cause unnecessary bloodshed, which is not necessary at this point of time, because all that bloodshed has already been done, and 17 times in the past Jarasandh has already been defeated and millions of soldiers are already killed. So Lord Krishna has decided, and the senior members of the Yadav dynasty have also, and the Kuru dynasty, Lord Yudhishthir and everyone, have also decided that bloodshed is not necessary at the moment. So on the suggestion of Uddhav, Lord Krishna has decided to take up this disguise of a Brahmin and beg for charity from Jarasandh and beg the and ask of Jarasandh the opportunity to fight on a one-to-one combat wrestling match, a mace fight. So he's disguised and he's doing what he does best, Lord Krishna. No one can disguise like Lord Shri Krishna. Even if you see philosophically, he's the super soul present everywhere, all pervading. But still, very few people can actually see him. He's in everyone's heart, still we can't perceive him. Only a pure devotee can actually recognize the Lord's presence everywhere. So Lord Krishna has come here, and we see that this is the chapter, the deliverance of Jarasandh, the slaying of the demon Jarasandh. If you read Krishna book, Prabhupada has titled it Deliverance of Jarasandh. So as the title speaks for itself, that Jarasandh gets killed, this is the final chapter in the life of Jarasandh. 17 times he has encountered Lord Krishna face to face. 17 times he has been defeated terribly, in a very humiliating way. And every time Lord Shri Krishna almost single-handedly exterminated the thousands and millions of soldiers that Jarasandh came with, and simply left Jarasandh to leave, saving his life, giving back his life, protecting him. But still Jarasandh, he couldn't even, that thought never occurred to him, that how is it possible for an ordinary human being can exterminate such large numbers of soldiers single-handedly? How is that possible? Maybe he is some divine personality, maybe he is God. That thought never occurred to him. And what to speak of recognizing the Lord? Say if even if from a moral point of view, if someone saves your life, it's such a blessing, it's such a favor that a person can do to you that he doesn't kill you and he gives you, spares your life. And Lord Krishna spared his life 17 times. So at least some kind of a favorable attitude, oh, this person has favored me 17 times. No. So he has still not come to the conclusion, and he has still not recognized Lord Shri Krishna, who is now standing in front of him disguised as a Brahmin. Even though he is seeing that there is something wrong, they don't look like Brahmins, they have bodies of Kshatriyas, massive bodies, and calluses of bowstring marks. He could make out that these people cannot be Brahmins. They may be royal soldiers, maybe kings. And then he's pondering over the fact that they can ask something unreasonable. They may even cheat me. And Jarasandh, he actually decides in his mind that even if they are not Brahmins, even if they are Kshatriyas, and if they ask me even for my life, I will give my life. I'm ready to sacrifice my life for that. So that was the thing. So on one hand, he could not recognize that the Lord had appeared there in disguise. Because as we see that we all humans and conditioned souls, we have this. We experience something called as the conformational bias. We are very selective in accepting certain things which reinforces our misconceptions. And Jarasandh is experiencing such a thing, a conformational bias. And even though he is seeing all these things which suggest that Lord Krishna cannot be an ordinary human being, but still he cannot come to the conclusion and cannot accept it for a fact that maybe this Krishna is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Why he is not able to do that? Because he is so conditioned, he is so attached, and he has developed this kind of an attitude towards Lord Krishna that, oh, this man has actually caused the death of my son-in-law. His two daughters were the wives of Kansa. And because he was killed by Krishna, so he has developed this vicious attitude towards Krishna. And he is just stuck on to that. And he is not able to think beyond that. And he is not coming to the right conclusions. But as we see, Krishna nevertheless, even though he comes disguised, and he is always disguised. He is disguised as time factor. He is disguised as death. Everyone experiences death, but no one can actually recognize Lord Krishna, that he is actually come in the form of death. But Krishna will come, and now he will separate Jarasandh from everything that he is attached to. Just as Lord Shri Krishna comes in the form of death, as time factor, and separates everything that the conditioned soul is attached to in his life. Because he is not able to recognize the presence of the Supreme Lord. So that was Jarasandh's folly. And that is also the condition of most of the souls in this world. Most of the conditioned souls in this world, that they fail to recognize the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we deny the presence of God. And we become corrupted with position and power, as we can see in the case of Jarasandh. He was so puffed up, he was so intoxicated by his power. And as a result of that, he could not see that how his son-in-law Kansa was a terrorist. By all means, he had imprisoned his father to fulfill his personal ambition of becoming the king. He couldn't see that. He thought his son-in-law was such a wonderful person. So, you see, And also the Bhagavatam speaks about how he was so cruel, Jarasandh, as a result of, you know, his conformational bias, that he had actually attacked and arrested 20,800 kings and held them as hostages for no reason at all, absolutely no reason. They were innocent, absolutely, and he was just holding them as hostages. So it's really a very strange phenomenon that how he was so... He has made a big blunder, a big mistake. As we can see, mistakes are so common, you see. We all make mistakes. It's a kind of confidence that we have that what we are doing is right. You know, it's we all need confidence to function in life. If we are not confident, then we can't survive. So we need to have confidence. But the problem happens when you don't have sufficient people to guide you, when you don't have your spiritual master telling you that, you know, and correcting you when you go wrong, is then your confidence can become dangerous. Everyone makes mistakes. So therefore, we should be double checking with, you know, the spiritual master and with the assembly of devotees and from the scriptures to make sure that we are on the right path. Or else we may end up like Jarasandh, making wrong conclusions. Like recently there was one article which I read about Singapore Airlines, which landed in one airport and had to take off, and the weather was not very good. There were predictions that there could be hurricane. So the pilot, along with his co-pilot and his assistant, they were making sure that they would take off before the hurricane sets into the airport, and taking off would be difficult because they were held up in flights and long flights, and they had made too many flights together. They had to go home. So if they couldn't take off within 10 to 15 minutes, then they would have been held up for a few hours or something like that. They didn't want to do that. So they quickly took directions from the tower control and they went towards the runway. And, you know, they investigate what went wrong. Whenever any air crash takes place, the investigators come into action and they check the voice recorders, cockpit voice recorders, they check the black box to see what mistake the pilot has made, or probably there is some malfunction in the aircraft instrumentation. So when they check up, they find, they're going through the recordings of the pilot, they found that this pilot was a very, very responsible pilot. He was a very careful, very cautious pilot. He always checked all his, you know, pilots have a checklist. There are so many things to go through before they get the plane flying. So he was very, very meticulous in going through the checklists and everything. So, he was very cautious because it was slightly raining and it was visibility was low. But he was very, very cautious that he doesn't speed up the plane. But what the investigators found out, that this pilot made a fundamental error. And that fundamental error was caused due to his being cautious. See, now how, when you're cautious, it's good. But sometimes when you're overcautious, making sure that your plane is, you know, he was making sure that the plane is not speeded up because it may skid, you know, because the runway is wet and all those things. So what happened as a result of that, he had to go to the runway. There were two runways in that particular airport, and he had to take the second runway, the left runway, and he ended up, because he was going very slow, he was in front of the right runway, and he had gone through that airport, he had taken off from that airport many, many times before. So he was thinking that probably he has reached that runway, or some mistake he made. There were boards put up that this is the right runway, this is the left runway. And the tower control has allocated him the left runway to take off. And somehow he makes the blunder and he comes onto the right runway. Because he thought that he was already there and he took the runway and he was ready for takeoff. He got the clearance and he takes off and picks up speed, And just when he was about to take off, he finds that there is a crane on the runway, parked, because the work is going on. It's a runway. And there was a huge crash. Many people died. Somehow this pilot survived. And he couldn't believe that he had made a mistake. When the investigators told him, do you know that you were on the wrong runway? It's impossible. Impossible. That cannot be possible. He couldn't believe it that he could make a mistake. Isn't it? So it happens that we all make mistakes. We cannot be overconfident that we are, you know, free from defects. Every one of us. That is the nature of conditioned souls. That's why somebody sent me a message saying that the universe is made up of protons, electrons, neutrons, and morons. Morons. Everyone, to some extent, to some degree or another, is a moron. Why? Because we make mistakes. Isn't it? So that was Jarasandha's mistake, that he could not recognize the Supreme Lord present right in front of him, disguised as Brahman. Even though he has all these wonderful qualities, as we can see, that he was a follower of the Vedic tradition, he was very devoted to the Brahmins, he used to protect cows. He was a devotee of Lord Vishnu. Because if a person is following Vedic tradition, how is it possible that he is not a devotee of Vishnu? It's not possible. So he has to be a devotee of Vishnu. So therefore, Jarasandha's case is a very typical case. It's a very typical case. Because generally, now he is labeled as a daitya, an asura. But according to the standard definition of asura, one who is a non-devotee of Vishnu. Vishnu bhakta smrito daiva asurastat viparyaya. The one who is a devotee of Lord Vishnu is an asura, is a daitya. And one who is not is an asura. It's pretty clear. But the thing is that we cannot apply this logic, this verse in Jarasandha's case, because he is already a devotee of Vishnu. And that is confirmed by the Acharyas. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he is saying in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Leela, 8th chapter, he says, Purva Yaiche Jarasandha Adi Rajagana Veda Dharma Kari Kare Vishnur Pujan. That there have been kings in the past like Jarasandha. Purva Yaiche Jarasandha Adi Rajagana. There have been others like Jarasandha who Veda Dharma Kari Kare Vishnur Pujan, that they were following the Vedic tradition and at the same time they were worshippers of Lord Vishnu. But then what makes Jarasandha a demon then? So then it is explained, Krishna na manile Tare daitya kari mani. And he is a demon because he could not accept Krishna, who was walking personally on the surface of the planet. He could not recognize him to be Vishnu. So therefore, this definition of who is a demon, who is a demigod, has to be further extended to include all the incarnations of Krishna. Not just Vishnu. It can apply to Kurma, it can be applied to Varaha, Krishna, and everyone. You cannot accept one incarnation of Lord and say the other incarnations are bogus. You cannot do that. And that was the mistake of Jarasandha. And therefore the Shastra says Jarasandha is such a case where he was a devotee, but he was not recognizing Krishna. And therefore Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami goes on to explain that Krishna nahi mane tare daitya kari jani, Chaitanya nahi mane yaiche daitya tare jani. And also people who are worshipping Radha and Krishna, also accepting Vishnu, but who do not accept Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as a Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is also a daitya. And therefore he goes on to further says, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is thinking, More nahi mane सब लोक हबे नाश। इति लागी कृपार्धर करी प्रभु सन्यास। एंड श्री चैतन्य महाप्रभु व्हेन ही रियलाइज्ड दैट पीपल आर नॉट रिस्पेक्टिंग हिम, यू नो, व्हेन ही वाज इन नवद्वीप एंड ही वाज इन द गृहस्थ आश्रम एंड पीपल मे समटाइम्स क्रिटिसाइज हिम, इज टू मेक श्योर दैट दे डोंट डू दैट, बिकॉज इफ दे डू दैट दे विल गो टू हेल लाइक जरासंत। सो ही टुक सन्यास। सो दैट इज अ प्रिंसिपल हियर दैट जरासंत कुडंट रिकॉग्नाइज एंड दैट वॉज हिज फॉल्ट। He was personally walking. So also Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was also, when he was on this planet, people could not recognize him. And also in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there are cases of those who offended Mahaprabhu and who were in dire circumstances because of that. Examples are like Ramchandra Khan. We know that He was a Brahmin by birth. The Khan title was given to him by the government because he was working for the government, for the treasury, for the exchequer, tax department. And his job was to collect taxes and give it to the government. So he became offensive to Haridas Thakur. And he saw the growing popularity of Haridas. And he plots schemes to bring him down by sending a prostitute to him and trying to seduce him. And as a result of that offense, he started committing further offenses. And in due course of time, he was one day visited by Lord Nityananda Prabhu, who along with his associates were preaching in West Bengal. So he, along with all his disciples, they come to his house. The great fortune of Ramchandra Khan that he gets the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Nityananda Prabhu, to come to his house. So he comes and he takes this place in the Chandi Mandap, the place where Durga is worshipped in aristocratic Bengali families. They generally have one room allocated, one hall allocated for worship of Durga. So he had that in his house. So Nityananda Prabhu is sitting along with all his associates, and here is the time to receive such a great exalted guest, Supreme Personality of Godhead coming personally in the house. And Ramchandra Khan, he becomes very envious of him. And instead of personally going to receive him, he sends a servant of his with a message to Nityananda Prabhu saying that we have no space for you here. There could be some other alternative arrangements made for your accommodation and your people, because there are too many of you, we can't accommodate you here. So that was a great offense to Nityananda Prabhu. And Nityananda Prabhu, he becomes very angry, but he's laughing. Laughs, and he gets up from that place and he says, yes, this place is not fit for me. And he says, this place is fit for cow slaughterers. And he leaves that place in a huff. And eventually we see that this Ramchandra Khan, because of his offenses, he defaults in his payment to the government. The taxes which he was collecting, he was not giving it. And as a result, there was a raid. The income tax people came and they raided him, his house. And they arrested his family members. And they took away everything. And they came inside the house. They slaughtered a cow in that same place where Lord Nityananda Prabhu sat. And he was completely devastated. The whole village suffered because of that offense. So here we can see another example of Ramchandra Khan, who accepted, he was a Brahmin, so he was a devotee. But he could not accept Lord Nityananda Prabhu as Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are examples of those who accepted Chaitanya, that son of Advaita, accepted Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the incarnation, but he could not accept Lord Nityananda, and therefore Advaita Acharya rejected him. So that is also one episode which is there mentioned. Also in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the episode of Bali Maharaj, we see that when Lord Vishnu appeared as Vamandev, Eshavaya Rochane Sakshad Bhagavan Atma Leelaya Kashyapat Aditer Jato Devanam Karya Sadhakaha. That Lord Vishnu appeared as the son of Kashyap and Aditi in order to cheat Bali and, you know, bring him down from the post of Indra. So that time, as soon as he appeared, there was so much of effulgence, so much of piety that the demons started losing their effulgence. They started becoming very weak. So all the demons were wondering, what is wrong? What's happening? So Bali, along with all the daityas, they go to Prahlad Maharaj. This is mentioned in the Puranas. They go to Prahlad Maharaj and they consult with him that, our dear grandfather, please explain to us what is causing the diminishing of our effulgence. So Prahlad Maharaj, he goes into a meditation, being a great devotee of Lord Vishnu, Lord Narasimha, and he understands that the Lord has appeared, has incarnated in the form of Vaman. So he says, Lord Vishnu has appeared in a Vamana Rupa. So immediately Bali, out of contempt and arrogance, he says, who is this Vaman? We will destroy him by our powers. He did not know, and therefore Prahlad Maharaj curses him. He says, you fool, I am ashamed to have you as my grandson. And therefore I curse you that you will lose all your wealth and go to hell. So own grandfather Prahlad Maharaj cursed him. But we know later on that Bali Maharaj honored Vaman when he appeared there, and with great love and devotion he surrendered to Vaman, and Bali was also, and his grandfather Prahlad was also very pleased with him. Vishnu was very pleased with him. And even though he lost everything, he was sent to hell, but he was also blessed at the same time by the Supreme Lord. But the point remains that it is not possible to accept one incarnation and not accept the other. All the incarnations, bona fide incarnations of the Lord, has to be accepted. Otherwise, they will be called as daitya, and you can't get the result of your devotional service. So here we can see, here in this purport, we can see the standard of guest reception, or how guests are received, what are the duties of a householder. And the standard that Jarasandh followed for guest reception is so phenomenal. He was ready to give up his life if that was asked by these Brahmins, even though he was a demon. And Lord Krishna has gone as a Brahmin. And even Lord Krishna has done that, actually. Even, you know, when many times when Krishna speaks Gita and speaks about all these qualities of being charitable, you know, he says, yajna dana tapas chaiva pavanani manishinaha yajna dana tapas karma natyajyam karyam eva tat. He says that you should always be engaged in yajna dana tapa. So when he is actually speaking about it, he also has done it. We see that how he has given lakhs and lakhs of cows every day. Daily basis he used to give thousands and thousands of cows to the Brahmins from Dwarka. We hear about actually many of the things, activities of Krishna, people discuss how he danced with the gopis and how he danced with, you know, how he stole the clothes of the unmarried gopis, and all these things are discussed. But what people do not discuss, some of the chapters of the Bhagavatam, is how he followed the duties of a householder so meticulously. And one of it was of his charitable nature, his guest reception. When he was in, as we saw in the previous chapters, that when Narada comes, even though Narada was entering into every palace, and Krishna had just received him in the previous palace, but every time Krishna came into the next palace, Krishna would be there, willing to wash his feet and receive him as if it was the first time that he was seeing him. He did not tell Narada, how many times you are coming to my house? I just saw you last. Again you are coming, again. How many times you want? What are you doing? He didn't say, okay, what is? He was every time receiving him, because he has come to his house with his different wife. And so that was his standard of guest reception. Even in the case of Durvas Muni, you know, it is said Durvas Muni goes around chanting a mantra saying that, I am Durvas, Everyone knows me. I'm easily irritated. But still I have to be received as a guest. Who is willing to receive me as a guest and feed me? I'm a Brahmin. But make sure that if you do that, you don't offend me or I'll curse you. And nobody would dare to go ahead and invite him. But Krishna decided to actually invite him to his house. And this is a conversation between Krishna and Pradyumna, he's telling. And Pradyumna asks, how did these Brahmins get to be respected in homes and like that? So Krishna says, tell the story that once I invited Durvas. And Durvas said, I will come to your house if you take me on a chariot. And the chariot should not be pulled by horses, it should be pulled by you, Krishna, and Rukmini. And Rukmini was made to pull the chariot. And he even took the whip and wished to whip her. And Krishna said that even when I saw that, I didn't say anything. Because he's a Brahmin, he should be respected. He's a guest. So he tolerated. Sometimes he would eat a lot, sometimes he would not eat anything. Sometimes he would laugh, sometimes he would cry, and very throwing tantrums. Somebody would have said, what is he? I mean, he's crazy or what? Why we got a madman into our house? But Krishna served him like anything. So much so that once Durvas Muni ate that, I told previously that, he had eaten kheer and he gave it to Krishna and he said, now you eat it. And Krishna ate it and he said, now the rest of it you apply it on your body. And then Krishna applied it all over his body and Durvas looked at him and he said, I'm very pleased with you. I'm very pleased with you. He looked at Rukmini and he said, I'm very pleased with you also. And I bless you that you will be the favorite queen of Krishna. You will never grow old. You will never get diseased. And as far as Krishna you are concerned, you will be the favorite god amongst all the gods. Yes. And whatever you say will be immortal. And you can choose the hour of your death. Your whole body will be like thunderbolt. No weapon can even touch your body. However, I am not very pleased with you because, you didn't apply that kheer under your feet. Why did you do that? So therefore, except for your feet, your whole body has become like thunderbolt, Hare Krishna. But please, I instruct you that continue to respect the guests and the Brahmins in your house in the same way. So Krishna took it to his head and he actually followed it. So we can see that how this very practical tip that how guests should be served. Jarasandh followed that principle. So here we can see that Jarasandh, even though he was having all these good qualities, he was charitable. That's why it is said that even if you have all these qualities, you may be very charitable. But for what are you doing that charity? Jarasandh was giving charity, but he was very proud. Many times people give charity and they want their names to be boards, to be put up, billboards, announcements to be made. So actually that is not the right attitude. It's not what you give, but in what attitude you give, which is very important. That's why it is said, Bhagavad Bhakti Hinasya Jati Shastra Japas Tapaha Apranasya Dehasya Mandanam Lokaranjanam. That if you do not have devotion, if you do not have the right attitude, then jati, your birth, shastra, your knowledge of your shastras, japa, tapa, all these things, mandanam lokaranjanam, they are only decorations on a dead body. Like in the West, I heard that there is an industry where you can give the body of your dead relatives and they decorate the body in such a wonderful way that the body, dead body, doesn't look like a dead body. He looks like he's just sleeping. They put a smile on the face, they put all the makeup and very wonderful. It's there, it exists. Mandanam lokaranjanam. So, if there is no devotion, as Sant Kabir says, Pothi pad pad jagamua pandit bhayo na koi. Dhai akshar prem ke jo pade so pandit hoy. He studied a lot, a lot of knowledge, useless information, but he has not learned to love, no character, then what is the point? It's nothing but empty show. So therefore, That's very... See, it's not like the demon is like born in a particular caste. It's not like Jarasandha, it's not that he was like... he was a Kshatriya, he was not some... So demons are not born in a particular caste. Had it been so, then Ravana, he was born in a Brahmin family. But he is known as a demon. But Jatayu was born as a vulture. Even amongst the bird species, it's considered to be the most abominable vulture. What does it eat? Eats dead corpses. But still he is a great saint, Mahatma. Lord Ramchandra performed his final rites, gave him the position of a father. So demons are not born in a particular a caste. It's not a matter of caste, it's a matter of attitude. And it is explained here that Jarasandha, and in fact in the Puranas, the reference is given that Jiva Goswami also speaks in the Sandarbha, that Jarasandha, who was he in his past life? He was Viprachitti in the past life. He was a demon who held his envy towards Lord Vishnu. Viprachitti was a demon who was son of Kashyap and Danu. The 32 or 33 sons that he had, they were all demons. And Viprachitti was present during the time of the incarnation of the Lord as Vamana. And when Vaman was scaling the universe, Viprachitti along with his associates had surrounded him. He was envious and he held on to that envy and took birth again as Jarasandha. And here he is. So it is not the matter of simply these things, external things. It's not a matter of caste or he was Kshatriya, but he was holding on to this attitude of envy. So that is the thing here, and his dedication and his all is amazing. His dedication to the Vedic culture, his charitable nature, his everything was unsurpassed. I mean, none of us in today's age probably could surpass Jarasandha in his charitable nature. Who can give one's life? It is said, life is so dear to a person that even if you tell a person that you are going to go back home, back to God or to heaven, still he will not be ready to die. That's how dear life is. But Jarasandha was willing to give up his life for the service of his guests. So nobody can match. But still he is known as a demon because he had no devotion. And therefore, it's not what we do, but you know why we do it. With a devotional attitude, out of selfishness, then that's very bad. In fact, all these qualities in an unqualified person can prove to be very dangerous. Prabhupada says, Maninam bhushitaha sarpa kim masauna bhayankaraha. That if you find a serpent, a poisonous serpent, it's dangerous. But if you find a serpent and you find a jewel on his head, then he is even more dangerous. So therefore, people who are decorated with all these amazing qualities of being very charitable, being very managerial and being enterprising and being resourceful and all these qualities that you find in someone, but he can prove to be very dangerous if he does not have the appropriate attitude. Jarasandha, we see that it is. Therefore, all these material qualities are just like zeros if one is not Krishna conscious. Prabhupada used to say, you put zeros before a one and all those zeros amount to a zero only. They have no value. But if you put those zeros after the one, then the more the number of zeros, the more the value. And therefore, that one constitutes Krishna consciousness. So everything should follow Krishna consciousness. Everything should follow dedication to Guru, service to Guru, surrender to Guru. If that is not there, then Chariram surupam tathava kalatram manascharu chitram dhanam meru tulyam manaschena lagnam guru rangri padme tathakkim 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 tathakkim. Shankaracharya says that you have everything, shariram surupam, beautiful body, tathava kalatram, a very attractive beautiful wife. You have everything. You have money, you have shama mandale bhupa bhupala vrindai sada sevitam yasya padar vindam manaschena lagnam guru rangri padme tathakkim 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 tathakkim. Your glories are sung in all the worlds, three worlds, people are singing your glories. Great emperors of the world are falling at your lotus feet. But if you are not surrendered to the instructions of your guru, tathakim, 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 what is the use? What is the value? So Krishna consciousness is like a one, and all other things amount to zeros. And therefore Krishna consciousness is an attitude, real attitude. A good attitude is very, very important. Krishna conscious attitude especially is very important. So that is some of the lessons that we can learn in this purport. Today is also the disappearance day of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So he was, because there's no breakfast, I'll just like to take 5 minutes to brief about him. He appeared on the 6th of Feb 1874. If he would have been living amongst us today, he would be 142 years old. He passed away on the 1st of January 1937. He lived up to the age of 62. So, his father, the great devotee Bhaktivinod Thakur, had prayed. He was very busy, you know. He was a magistrate and he was working for the government. He did not have much time to execute the purpose of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's descent to preach and establish the mission of Mahaprabhu. He did not have enough resources. He did not have enough manpower, and therefore he prayed to the Lord. Oh Lord, please send me someone who can help me and assist me. And by the grace of the Lord Jagannath, that person who would help him appeared to him as his own son. And we are told, the biographers write that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when he was born with the umbilical cord wrapped around his body like a Brahmin thread. Extraordinary birth. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was confirmed that his son is actually the person who was sent by Lord to assist him when one day the Rath Yatra was passing outside of his house in Jagannath Puri, Grand Road, and it stopped there for 2 or 3 days. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, seeing the opportunity, along with his wife, they went with the little small boy to the cart, and as they touched the head of this small boy to the lotus feet of Lord Jagannath, just at that time, at that right moment, the garland of Jagannath fell and garlanded the little boy. Bhaktivinoda Thakur immediately understood that he was the selected person, he was the chosen one who would do the wonderful preaching of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Called him Bimal Prasad. That was the name that his father had given him. So he grew up to be a very intelligent young boy. It's said that even at the age of 7, he designed his own shorthand. At the age of 7, he had memorized the whole Bhagavad Gita at the age of 7 or 8. And he was also very bold. His father's seminal spiritual master was Bipin Bihari Goswami, it is said. And once it so happened that he had visited Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur would serve him very humbly and he would bow down. And once Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur saw that Bipin Bihari Goswami put his feet on the head of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he became a little upset with that. And when his father left the room, he went and asked Bipin Bihari Goswami, "Are you so advanced? Do you think you are so advanced that you can put your feet on my father's head? Do you really know who my father is?" So Bipin Bihari Goswami saw the young boy speak like that. He told Bhaktivinoda Thakur, "See how your son is speaking. And he's bold. He can be very bold up to the point of being rude, but he's not rude." So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was pleased by that in one sense, and he narrated that incident to his other associates also. So he was very bold. And even as a sannyasi, it is said, most of the time he would be very soft, but sometimes he would be a little harsh also. Like it is said that once in his lecture, one brahmachari was sleeping, and he took his danda and whipped him. And one brahmachari went to sleep during the class, and he told the other devotees that you pick him up and throw him into the Radha Kund. Throw him into the Radha Kund like that. So he was a very bold preacher. The chopping technique he used to use, and he used to, during those times, during Bhaktivinoda Thakur's times, it was the time when the Gaudiya Vaishnav parampara was hijacked by the upper sampradayas, and they had taken the Gaudiya Vaishnav image to bad repute. There were 13 of them, Aula, Baula, Jati Gosai, and Saki Beki, Chudadhari, and all those people. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was trying to establish the true principles of Bhagavad Dharma, and they were like ruining, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would often speak against it, dismantle them, and he took on them head on. There is one such episode that he was going after taking sannyas. In 1918 he took sannyas. Now I'm going back and forth, I'm not going in a chronological order, but 1918 he took sannyas, and 1918 was the time when he established the Gaudiya Math in Calcutta also. So at that time, when he was coming from Calcutta to Jagannath Puri or Navadvip probably, in the train there was a Mayavadi who dared to preach Mayavad philosophy to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati in that compartment. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur would never eat mangoes. You know that. Because, he had eaten a mango in his childhood, and his father just told him, "You eat mango without offering to Lord?" He said, "Oh, I did a great sin." So he vowed that he'll never eat mangoes. So people used to give him mangoes, he used to not eat, so it used to get rotten. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was looking at this man preaching to him. He looked at his disciple and he said, "Take out those rotten mangoes and feed him." And they force fed this man rotten mangoes, and what happened was a miracle, that this man surrendered to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and said, "I vow that I'll never preach monistic philosophy in my life." So something, a miracle like that, how Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to adopt the chopping technique, but this chopping technique would be successful. You see, we cannot imitate. If we do chopping technique, people will chop us. We will be chopped. He had that purity and that advancement that he could do these things and convert people. Like Prabhupada would do so many things, called rascal and things like that, and he could get away with that. And happily, people would be happily, they would think that his rascal was so nice. It was like a father, like a grandfather trying to teach something to us. But if we do that and say rascal or something like that, we can end up in real, real, real trouble. You can't imitate. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was like that. Very strict at the same time. Very soft. Some brahmachari, he got upset and he left the ashram, and Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati chastised everyone, saying that how could you allow him to go? Find him! And they found that he was doing some service. They brought him, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, sat him down, spoke to him, made him stay in the ashram. Very loving, very personal, very caring, took care of everyone very nicely in the ashram. Even though he was such a great acharya, preaching all over the country. Once there was a cook in his ashram who was a very offensive person. He used to offend all the devotees, could not get along with anyone, very harsh in his speech. And he died one day, and all the devotees were like, "Good riddance." And they were like, they had nothing good to say about him. They were just discussing amongst themselves, "Oh, good, he's gone," and whatever. Nothing good to say, anything positive about him. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur happened to hear that and said that when he would cook, it was so amazing. So wonderful. He used to do his services so nicely. When he would iron my clothes and he would give my clothes, it was so spotless, so proper. And when the disciples saw that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur could see all good qualities, even in a person who had no good qualities apparently, they could understand that how he was Adosha Darshi. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he just didn't have any tendency to find faults with anyone. And in fact, that constituted his last instructions, which he told his disciples when he left, that always aspire to advance in Krishna consciousness and get the mercy of Rupa Raghunath. Always be engaged in chanting Hare Krishna. And always be engaged in preaching activity. And do not commit offenses to devotees. Those were his final instructions when he left this world. And therefore, there are many such pastimes, like in he took initiation from Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj, even though he was such a great scholar that at the age of 18, when he went to college to learn Sanskrit, within a very short time he mastered all the six systems of Sanskrit, Vyakaran and all those systems. He was an expert. He was a great scholar. But still he accepted a spiritual master, Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj, who was an illiterate. Thus explaining that how superficial is material degrees and all those things. Rejected. Spiritual master was illiterate. But he took initiation. And Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj was not willing, and we all know that pastime very well, that he was not willing to give him initiation. But finally he got initiation. And after that he chanted for 7 years. Non-stop, 194 rounds daily. And he went into such a state of ecstasy that some of the associates and contemporaries of Bhaktivinoda Thakur came to seek Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's help to spread the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Calcutta. And he comes searching for him. And someone says that we don't know where he is, but there is some Babaji there who is chanting Hare Krishna throughout the day. Maybe he is Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, maybe. And then he goes and he finds that Bhakti Siddhanta was like running like a madman in saying Gauranga, 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 Radha Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And with his self same clothes, completely in a dressed way, he jumped into the Ganges. And this man was bewildered. And he took him out of the water and he said, my dear Prabhu, I want your help, I have come to seek your help to preach the message and the Sankirtan movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, what is the need? I mean, it's already there. Can't you see? Mahaprabhu is doing Sankirtan everywhere. Gauranga, Gauranga. He said, Gauranga, Gauranga. And he ran away, completely oblivious of anything external. So that was his state. And then immediately after a few years, in 1918, he himself, when he takes sannyas, he comes to Calcutta and he comes to the man's house and he says, immediately make preparations for registering the Gaudiya Math. And he did that. Eventually, when he came out of that, you know, 7 year chanting period, he was just chanting, chanting, chanting. So that was the purity. It was a Nayan Manjari. And some acharyas, some biographers say that he was an assistant of Kamal Manjari, his father, internal associate from the spiritual world. So such was his dedication and his love for the holy names. And he preached vigorously. He preached to the Westerners. He had 12 Western disciples at that time also. He had his disciples go abroad. He sent his disciples to London, and he had 12 Western disciples. Srila Prabhupada was not the first, actually, in one sense, to have Western disciples. He was also having. And then, of course, we know that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave instruction to Srila Prabhupada to preach to the Westerners in English language. And what was his caliber to inspire a person like Bhakti Vedanta Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada? Can understand. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, as we know, was not happy by the attachment of his sannyasi disciples, who had become attached to facilities in the Gaudiya Math. They were attached to the rooms which was allocated to them. Each wanted some rooms facing the Ganges and things like that. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was so disgusted and he said, Avagun Jalbe, there will be fire in the mutt. You will just be bickering, quarrelling amongst each other. The Gaudiya mutt will break into various factions. He knew it and therefore he called Bhakti Vedanta, Abhay Charan at that time, and instructed him that if you get any money, print books, preach in English language to the Westerners. If I had the capacity, I would have brought down all this Bagh Bazar temple with all the marble and sold it to print books. Unfortunately, you see, the neophyte attitude of my sannyasi disciples is causing so much of havoc. So, like that, he received the instructions from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Srila Prabhupada and he took it to his heart, and we see that what a wonder. Wonderful movement has started by the grace of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So let us meditate on some of these pastimes that we have just spoken about on this very auspicious day and follow his instructions by also engaging in the process of Sankirtan by chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. Shri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Premanandi, Hari Hari Bol.